It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
An early childhood taxing district, what on earth is that?
The latest in politics and world affairs.
I don't think that we should be passing legislation that is so complicated that people kind of throw up their hands and say, oh, I can't understand it.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
It is not fair that just because you're a big business that you get a break on this and the little guy doesn't.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation. Welcome to the show. I am Kim Munson, and be sure and check out the website, kimmunson.com. We have all of our show recaps there, the podcast. There's now actually an icon where you can find the podcast, and the show will be rebroadcast tonight from 10 to 11 p.m. I'm thrilled to have in studio with me as my guest host, co-host, I should say, and that is Kelly Sloan. Kelly, it's great to have you here.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
You are an author. You are very involved down at the State House on in significant issues. And so we will be talking about a couple of things. First of all, what you see coming down the pike here. This next legislative session, and it's like fasten your seatbelts, right?
Right. Yeah, I'll take my turn at the can of prognosticating on what may be coming.
I'm glad. I saw that you brought your crystal ball in here, so I'm glad we have that here, too.
There's plenty floating around.
Yeah, that's for sure. And then you'd written a piece that was actually published back in early December regarding the opioid crisis. And so we'll talk with you a little bit about that as well.
Great.
So before we do that, though, we want to say thank you to the team, to Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie for all the good work that you do on this. And thank you to you, our listeners. You each are treasured. You're valued. You have a purpose. Go out today and take care of heart, soul, mind, and body. Strive for excellence, and appreciate all of you very much. We look at these issues as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And now that the Colorado State Legislature has convened, many folks down there think that they should use the power of force, quote unquote, to make your life better. And we did the rally the other day, which was our Stand for Colorado rally, talking about freedom versus force and force versus freedom. Socialism ultimately comes down to force. You can vote your way in, but man, it's difficult to get back out of it. And it is never compassionate to take other people's rights, their property, or their freedom via force, whether it's with a weapon, policy, or unpredictable and excessive taxation. If something is a good idea, then you don't need force to implement it. And we continue to see the socialization of key things in our economy here in Colorado, that they're key things that if there's freedom involved with them, then everyday people can go after their hopes and dreams. But when government gets involved, typically the supply is limited, the quality goes down, and the cost goes up. And we continue to see a movement of socializing our transportation, education, energy, housing, water, broadband, data, healthcare. And these are all things that have made our lives better. And if government gets involved, it's going to get more expensive, and probably the quality is going to go down. So, Steve, what is on your mind this morning?
Always I sit here and listen to you through the open, and you just named those three things to look out for.
The quality goes down.
Well, no, I'm sorry. Oh. With a weapon, policy, or unavoidable,
unpredictable and excessive taxation.
All right. The weapon, we don't have to worry about that one, at least yet. But the policy and the unpredictable taxation, yeah, it's out there.
Well, and sometimes we should probably add in the word fee, because with TABOR, Colorado's Taxpayers Bill of Rights, if we're going to, these PBIs down at the State House are going to raise taxes or incur debt we have to pay off, or keep TABOR tax refunds, they just are supposed to have the good manners to ask for our consent. But so instead of asking for our consent, they just change the word, and that word is fee. And there is one thing that may be coming down the pike here, and that is a forced family leave bill. And Patty and I were talking about it the other day. On these issues, we are not against paid family leave. We're not against you know, people being responsible regarding all these different issues that we're talking about. What we're concerned about is force, that force would be involved in that. And we do not think that government force should be a component in these things. And the idea, it's really dishonest to impart a fee or a tax and call it a fee. You know, just changing the words, I think it's really dishonest.
I like the fact that you put that disclaimer out there, because like you're talking about family leave or any of the issues that come under the umbrella of freedom to drive. We are not against any of these things. But again, it's the force factor. It's the, you know, it's the fact that, you know, here's a technology that's not mature and it's being forced on us anyway. That's the type of things that, you know, get us going.
Yeah, that's for sure. You mentioned freedom to drive and the ability for people to choose the vehicle that works best for them and their families and their business. You know, there's freedom in that. And we are seeing through public policy, there were executive orders that were passed by Governor Hickenlooper and also by Governor Polis that, in essence, are trying to push people out of the vehicles that work best for them into vehicles that PBIs think are, that they want people to drive. I know, Kelly, that's something that's near and dear to your heart, is the freedom of mobility, the freedom for people to be able to choose the vehicle that works best for them.
You know, and it's not just the executive orders trying to force people into electric vehicles or trying to force more electric vehicles onto the market, which, you know, and again, I'm not against electric vehicles.
Right.
Heck, if I could afford one, I'd probably have one. All I generally do is boot back and forth between Cherry Creek and downtown. But, you know, like your producer said, it's the market's not ready for it. And every time the government tries to force something onto the market that the market's not ready for, you end up having adverse consequences. And our concern is that, you know, who's that going to hurt most? It's not going to hurt the millionaire, the really well-off people that can afford these vehicles as a second vehicle, as a toy. It's going to hurt the small business owner who needs, a pickup truck or something like that. It's going to hurt the single mom who needs a larger vehicle to cart her kids around. It's going to hurt the lower-income people that need a vehicle, because, you know, when you try and force onto the market more of a particular type of vehicle than it can handle, there's a cost to that, and that cost has to be shifted somewhere else, and it's going to be shifted onto things that people actually buy. But, you know, it's not, when we talk about, you know, the freedom to drive and, you know, this kind of social engineering of getting people into, the modes of transportation that the government feels is appropriate, it's not just the executive orders on, you know, the low emission vehicle standards and the zero emission vehicle standards, but you see it especially around downtown Denver. You know, with municipal policies that are taking away vehicle lanes for bus lanes and bike lanes, that are taking away parking spaces. You know, it's almost impossible to park downtown anywhere anymore. And you see that's a lot of that's municipal, but you see that at the state level too. There's a bill actually was introduced already that will allow. I'm trying to think exactly how it's worded, but it gives bicycles almost full right of way all the time. It's going to make it a penalty for a car to use a bike lane to turn or anything
really?
Like that. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. We'll have to talk about that more.
You remember a couple of years ago they passed a bill to allow bikes to basically disregard stop signs.
Right. I do remember that.
You know, it used to be, even when I was growing up, you know, if you wanted to be on a bicycle, well, that's fine, but you obey the traffic laws like everybody else.
Just like everybody else.
They want to put the burden onto the car driver for using the road, as opposed to, you know, taking the responsibility away from the bicyclist to, you know, look out for himself.
Right. That's very, very short-sighted. And the other thing is this really the proper role of government? I mean, really?
Well, yeah, on a larger philosophical level, yeah, I mean, that's the central question. Is this
the proper role of government,
the proper purview of government? But again, you just look at the consequences. You know, Denver is not New York or Chicago. You know, we were built differently. We're a different geography. For all kinds of reasons, we're not as dense a city as some of these larger centers. We just don't have the mass transit capability out there right now for, you know, lower-income people to be able to boot around without having a vehicle.
Or the desire. We're Westerners. You know, we like the freedom of mobility. We like the freedom to drive. As I was driving over here, Steve went past a RTD bus with not a person on it, but the driver. Right. Now, just think about how much that costs to make that happen, the carbon footprint of making that happen. But we'll talk about that sure. probably as we get into segments 3 and 4. There's a couple of things that I really wanted to mention. And this actually is connected as I was thinking about our 15 amazing women spoke at our Stanford, Colorado rally. Washington Irving was an American short story writer, essayist, biographer, historian, and diplomat of the early 19th century. He is best known for his short stories, Rip Van Winkle and The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, both of which appear in his collection, The Sketchbook of Jeffrey Crayon Gent. His historical works include biographies of Oliver Goldsmith, Muhammad, and George Washington, as well as several histories of 15th century Spain that deal with such subjects as Alhambra, Christopher Columbus, and the Moors. He was born in 1783, and he died in 1859. So there's your historical lesson on that, Producer Steve. And this is what Washington Irving said. He said, "There is in every true woman's heart a spark of heavenly fire, which lies dormant during the broad daylight of prosperity, but kindles up and beams and blazes in the dark hour of adversity." And quite frankly, I think our 15 women that spoke at Stanford, Colorado rally on Wednesday, I think that you could see that there's something that is sparking these women, the thing that brings us together. We were very diverse from an ideological standpoint. What has brought us together is to stand for freedom instead of force. And I think that you're starting to see that happen. Steve, you were down there. Could you comment on that?
Well, undoubtedly, your timing on this is very timely. The women were all speaking on unique subjects to a degree, but every one of them had this conviction and this fire. Some really, downright thumped the podium pretty darn hard. And that's probably, what you just quoted, that is the reason behind it.
And I was going to do a little bit of levity, but we're running out of time, and I want to address something. We did have press there, and Kyle Clark actually from Channel 9 tweeted out something about the rally. And unfortunately, it was really, I think, dishonest journalism, if you will. He did not call me. I was the organizer of the rally. I did send out press releases, never contacted me. He did not talk about the 15 women who were the speakers. And he tried to portray a schism between the rally of freedom versus force and our legislators that were inside. He did not report that actually I think 12 of them came out to the steps of the Capitol, and we recognized them, that the 15 women were talking about freedom versus force. He did not contact any of us about that, but instead I think he tried to mischaracterize the rally, and I'm really disappointed in him because he tries, or he says that he is a fresh face and that he's humble and that he's trying to give all sides of the issue, and he's not. And I just want to say I'm very, very disappointed in him because I've had great regard for him up to this point.
As did I. When you called me into the studio yesterday, say, "Hey, look at this," it just kind of took my breath away because I thought, gee, I thought, Kyle, you were one of the good guys, but you're right. His portrayal there made it sound like the legislators inside were so far apart from the what was going on outside. And I thought, gee, Kyle, there was actually some connective tissue between the two groups. And the whole reason for what was going on the outside was because of all the dismal things that came down in 2019. But, none of that was mentioned.
It was, and so it was dishonest because it did not include the real picture. It actually took, I think, a few things and just tried to create a narrative that he wanted to create. And I felt that was very dishonest. And so, the thing about it is, lie to me once, okay, but lie to me several times and, I'm not going to believe you. And so I really have come to mistrust him after what happened yesterday. And so maybe this is, I'll give a little levity here. The voter was talking to her friend about the trouble of trusting the Boulder Denver politician they elected to the Colorado State House. Her friend replied, she said, "When you see him rolling his eyes, he's telling the truth. Whenever you see him stroking his chin, he's telling the truth. Whenever you see him fiddling his tie, he's telling the truth." So her friend says, "So how do you know when that Boulder Denver politician is lying?" She said, "When he opens his mouth."
You know, I had the drummer standing here all ready to go, and you said, I'm not going to go the levity side, so I sent him home.
Did you? Okay.
So no drummer today.
That's okay. Before we go to break, I want to give a shout out to one of our great partners, and that is Hooters Restaurants. You know, it's a real freedom story of why we have a relationship. As they were opening their restaurant, they were actually having some force on whether or not they would be able to open their restaurant on a municipal level. And we stood for freedom, said they should be able to compete in the free market with other restaurants. And so through that, they became a friend, and then a few years later became a sponsor of the show. And so it's a great place to watch all the sports events. The 2020 College National Championship is Monday night. The Clemson Tigers take on the LSU Tigers. It's called the Tiger Bowl. The Nuggets come home tomorrow to take on Cleveland. The Colorado Avalanche come off the road to face the Penguins tonight. And, of course, it's the NFL playoffs this weekend. So Hooters is the place to go to watch all of these games. They have great wings. You can actually drop by, and Wednesday is wing day, or you can have, you know, Hooters restaurants, barbecue shrimp. I'm drawing a blank here. We had the girls over on Wednesday night, but the barbecue shrimp is just great. You can have it delivered to your front door. So go to my website, kimmunson.com, and you can get more information there. We're going to go to break. When we come back, Brad Beck is on the line, and something really wild happened up in Erie. There's $1 million of taxpayers' money that I think is still missing. We're going to talk to Brad Beck about that. We'll be right back.
You want to succeed, so you need to dress for the job, event, or relationship that you seek. For more than 30 years, entrepreneur and stylist Kim Munson has been helping women look their very best. And guys, Kim can help you with made-to-measure shirts that fit great and you'll love to wear. Guys and gals, if you want to up your game, freshen your look, email kim@kimmunson.com for your initial style consult. Kim@kimmunson.com.
Welcome back. This is Kim Munson, and this is the Kim Munson Show. And thrilled to have on the line with me my friend Brad Beck. Brad Beck is the co-founder of Liberty Toastmasters, of which I am a member. I have to say that I'm not sure that I have my best Liberty Toastmasters hat on this morning. Excuse me, I have so much going on, Brad, that I'm probably talking a little too fast. If you were going to give me an evaluation, you might say, slow it down, Kim. So I'm going to do that, Brad.
Well, good morning and Happy New Year, Kim. And it's so good to hear your voice in the new year, the new decade.
Well, there is a lot going on, but something really wild happened up in Erie just recently. Can you tell our listeners what's going on?
Well, I'd be happy to. You know, greetings from Nigeria, I guess, because I don't know where our $1.1 million for a final payment for a bridge went to. Neither does the town of Erie. But as I normally get a weekly update from our town administrator, Malcolm Fleming is his name, and it's been fairly consistent. And at the end of the year, we were notified in that little newsletter, along with how to recycle your Christmas tree and various other town happenings. Oh, there was this little incident of the town of Erie being a victim of financial fraud. And I find that turn of phrase pretty interesting, but in a nutshell, what happened was that somebody acting supposedly on behalf of SEMA Corporation, the construction company that built the bridge, and they did a fine job, great time, went very well. It's a beautiful bridge. They went online to the town's website, whoever this person was, and filled out a form and sent it into the town finance department. They looked at it, and it was accurate, but they did not check it necessarily for authenticity. So it went into the town processed it, and they sent the wire transfer to the supposed construction company, and then the bank on November 5th notified the town of a possible fraud. So mind you, this started out back in October, and we found out about it as citizens in the end of December. I'm sure there was some requests by our local police, and I understand the FBI are involved in looking into the situation, which is fine. But the real concern here is we have a town administrator, we have a financial department, we have folks that process all kinds of payments for various vendors of the community, and my question is, where was the process, what was the process in place, and who is doing oversight? And when I send an email to the town administrator on Sunday, I've not received any response back yet. I'm sure they're busy and I'm busy. But if you go onto the social media sites, of which there are several in our town, people are livid. And the idea that the town of Erie can recoup this money from the insurance we had is not the point. The point is it's going to affect all the citizens. The lack of trust, the lack of transparency, the inability of our local town officials, especially the mayor, to get in front of this. If I was in an elected position, I would have had some kind of press release or some kind of activity going on in the forefront rather than a reaction. And that just didn't happen. It's all been reaction. So there's a lot of, let's say, hornets that have been hit out of the nest in our community, and we want answers.
So you're saying ultimately that insurance, the town is saying that insurance will cover this loss, that they're not going to have to go to the taxpayers for this additional $1 million to pay for the work. Is that correct?
Well, that's what they're hoping for. The town administrator has said that not to worry because we have this insurance fraud, but that's not the point of the situation. And ultimately, all taxpayers will end up paying for it,
right?
Because it comes out of all taxpayers' pockets. But in particular, if there was a process in place, why didn't the employee who processed this particular check follow it? If there wasn't a process in place, why not? We have two new positions, supposedly, that were already in the budget for a finance manager and another position, which is befuddling because two couldn't do it. Why do you think?
Why do you need four?
Yeah. Four inefficient people are even worse. But, that's the town grows, and we live in a great community. Don't get me wrong. Erie is, when I first moved here 20 years ago, we had one paved road, a couple of good bars, and lots of great people, but it was about 3,000 people. The town has grown tremendously. We're almost 30,000 people. We're going to get bigger, and that's all good and happy to see the continued growth. But as we do get bigger, more people doesn't make the process better. And when you're not paying attention to what the processes are within the community, especially on our local government, I don't know if you know this, Kim, or not, but Erie is the largest statutory town in Colorado.
No.
Which means, all of our finances go through the state first and then come back. And they're trying to make our town, I believe, in the next election, home rule. Well, I don't know if home rule will make us any better because we're not paying attention now. What do we think we're going to do when, nobody knows what's going on, and in particular the state? So I'm curious as to what the town is actually going to follow through on. I know the police and the FBI are involved, and hopefully that will get some resolution. But what I find curious is when our town administrator was on the local Denver news channels, they asked him his reaction, and he said, well, I feel violated. I was laughing at it because he feels violated. What about the taxpayers? What about the people in the community that put their trust in our local officials and those that are employed by them? And we feel violated. And I think the town needs to take a good, long, hard look at processes and get out of the mindset of trying to be another Boulder with more bureaucrats. We need people who are going to take the responsibility and not have an agenda and look out for the equal individual natural rights of our citizens at the local level.
Okay, Brad, I'm going to throw something out here, and that is regarding I've watched some different things happening up in Erie, and in fact, I remember, I think it was this summer, that the city or the town of Erie was not going to let a Republican women's group use a public building for their meeting.
Correct.
Okay? And I did go up and make public comments at the town council. I'm thinking, You know, again, you know, as you can see, I stand for freedom instead of force. I think anybody should be able to use those public buildings for their meetings. I've seen an agenda up there in Erie where they don't always stand for freedom. They stand for force. And you said the town administrator said that he feels violated, that this money was taken from where it was supposed to go. And many of the town council members in Erie, and of course we've got people down here at the State House as well, have used public policy to take away the opportunity of those in the oil and gas industry. We are starting to see jobs disappear because of public policy. How about the people that are losing their jobs because of public policy? I think they feel violated as well. Is that a stretch, or what do you think?
No, I totally agree with you. I have a lot of friends here in our community that work for oil and gas, and you constantly hear the refrain, well, it's a health issue. Really? Well, my friends are perfectly healthy that work on the platforms, that do the maintenance, that go out and do all the readings. Accidents happen in life, and there are going to be unfortunate situations, and that's part of the risk of life that's inherent. But I have to tell you, from talking to the experts and talking to people that work on the rigs and people that work in the industry, it is as safe as any industry. And what's amazing to me is that they demonize it, and yet the progressives tend to use it more than anybody else. Case in point, they all want electric cars and they all want solar. But, you know, on the backside, you need the coal-fired generating plants to keep the energy consistent. When it's not sunny out, when you don't have the wind, you're going to need that source of fossil fuels. And I love fossil fuels. They make our lives better. They make the ability to have good vegetables at the market in the middle of winter.
Mm-hmm.
I love heat in my house. I like a cold beer in the summer. You know, all the things that modern life gives us are thanks to our friends in the oil and gas business. And I'm grateful for them every day. You know, without them, you know, like you say, there are people out there that have this agenda in our community and other communities around, all the little towns around Boulder and Erie, Lafayette, Louisville, and they all have these agenda-driven initiatives to change our way of life. And quite frankly, I fight every day here in the People's Republic of Boulder County, and I'm two blocks from the county line where I can see freedom into Weld County. But I am going to be a thorn in their side, because it just has to, some of us have to stand up and say enough is enough. You guys don't own us. You're not our kings. In fact, you work for us. You're doing the people's business. And please respect our individual rights.
Well, that's for sure, and I appreciate the good work that you're doing there, and continue to keep us informed. I am a little troubled that it's Friday and that you had emailed your town administrator on Sunday and you've not heard back from him. They work for us, and so I'm a little troubled by that. Brad Beck, keep us in the loop on what's going on with that.
I will, and if I have one quick second, I just wanted to put a plug in, Kim, for the Boulder County Lincoln Day dinner coming up on February 8th.
Okay.
And it's going to be fabulous. We have Professor William Allen as our keynote speaker. He's over at CU now as the conservative chair, and we're excited to have Isabel Brown, who's the master of ceremonies. She was the Turning Point USA, now Prager University star, who has done quite a few videos on what's going on college campuses. And so your listeners can go to www.boco, for Boulder County, bocogop.org, and get all the information and purchase tickets. We're going to be holding it right in the belly of the beast in downtown Boulder, Colorado, from 6 to 9 p.m. on Saturday, February 8th, honoring our 16th president.
Well, awesome, and that's right around the corner. So, again, what's that website?
It is www.bocogop.org. All the ticket information's there, and Dr. William Allen will be our keynote speaker. He's forgotten more than I'll ever know, so it'll be an exciting evening.
Sounds great. Brad Beck, thanks so much, and keep us in the loop on what's going on.
I will. Thanks, Kim.
Okay, just a couple of things. We're going to go to Jace McBride. But before we do that, Bob in Michigan texted me. He said, sounds like Kyle Clark tried to tell you what the picture on the puzzle looks like without all the pieces in place. And so, Bob, thank you for that comment. Jason McBride, you're always putting the pieces to the puzzle together for people's economic well-being. How are you doing this morning?
Oh, I'm doing wonderful, Kim. Thanks for asking.
And we've been talking about the trading days. When you were in studio yesterday, we were talking about, you know, some different indicators. And so what's going on right now on the January indicator?
Well, I think it bears repeating for those who may have missed yesterday, but one of the indicators I look at is the first five trading days of the year, Kim. So this study says if the market is up after the first five trading days of the year, then it has a good chance of being up for the entire year. Well, going all the way back to 1950, this one does have some meat on the bone, as I like to say. Out of 44 years, Kim, when the market was up for the first 5 days, only four of those years resulted in significant losses for the year. So the way I look at that, you've had a 91% chance of not getting your rear end kicked in the market for the year if it's up after the first 5 days. Now, people would say, well, what if the first 5 days are down? What does that tell us? It doesn't tell us a whole lot. In the years when the first 5 days have been down, it's kind of been a 50-50 shot whether the market will be up or down for the year.
Okay. Well, so what do you say? Do you think people should, you know, really pay attention to this and make some investment decisions regarding this?
Well, I think it's another data point. I think, you know, every little piece of information that has shown a pattern to it that might give you a slight edge is worth paying attention to. You know, I don't know, I'd base my entire investment portfolio on it, but this is maybe one of those things if you were feeling really nervous, you see that we're up the first 5 days, maybe you're a little bit less nervous than you may have been. And by the way, the first 5 days this year were up, actually.
Okay. Well, good deal. Now, I know that the unemployment or the employment numbers are going to be coming out or probably just came out. In fact, I should tell you, I just saw that headline come through. Economists expected 160,000 jobs. And at this point, they're saying 145,000 came in. So is the market reacting to that? Are the futures reacting to that at all, Jason?
You know what? My cable seems to be broken this morning. I can't see the future, so I don't know.
So that's why I would not like to trust an electric autonomous car to get me from one place to another is because it's not always dependable. So Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management, be sure and check out our website together. It's AIRpresidential.com. That's AIRpresidential.com. Jason, thanks so much. We can talk about the jobs report then on Monday. And you have a great weekend, and we're going to go to break. Kelly Sloan is in studio. And I can't wait to pick his brain on what he thinks about what's coming down the pike on this new legislative session. So we'll be right back.
It's not pretty, Kim.
It's not pretty. Okay, we'll go to break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Award-winning realtor Karen Levine has 30 years of experience with RE/MAX Alliance. As a director with the National Association of Realtors, Karen Levine works to protect private property rights. Karen Levine believes in homeownership. Because of Karen's love of dogs, Karen volunteers with GRR, Golden Retriever Rescue of the Rockies, helping golden retrievers find their forever homes. Choose Karen Levine to buy or sell your home because she understands that it's more than just a house. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine with RE/MAX Alliance today at 303-877-7516. That's 303-877-7516.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson, and be sure and check out my website, kimmunson.com. Really excited to have in studio with me Kelly Sloan. Kelly, you really have your ear to the ground on what's going on down at the State House, but also, you know, nationally. You have written a piece that was published back in December in the Washington Examiner, is that
yes.
right?
Yeah.
And it was regarding opioids, and, you know, what's going on with that? I really don't have my brain around it.
Well, we do have an opioid crisis in the country. I mean, I don't think there's any question about that. You know, as I wrote in the article, the numbers are pretty extraordinary. In 2017, drug overdoses in the U.S. claimed more than 72,000 lives, and over 47,000 those were from opioids. So it is a problem. Drug abuse overall has long been a problem, and opioids are a new manifestation of that problem. The response to it in last few years has been good. It's been focusing on the treatment side, on issues with overprescription, which, a lot of observers say that's probably how it started, was it got pretty easy to overprescribe some of this stuff, and then you get hooked on them. I know I don't like even, the few times I've been, in the military and afterwards that I've been in the hospital with a serious injury, I didn't really like the effect of, morphine or any of that, especially, coming off it. So that has been a problem, and that's been pretty adequately addressed. Just some awareness in the medical community. They've taken it upon themselves not to overprescribe. And then in terms of treatment, treatment options in corrections and on the street, and making sure that first responders, are equipped to deal with this. So that side has pretty much been taken care of, or is being taken care of. To the expense, I think, of the law enforcement side. Now I think it's more of a law enforcement problem than it really is a treatment problem. In a lot of ways, we kind of approached it polar opposite the way we did the war on drugs back in the 80s, which was almost entirely enforcement. Now, you know me. I'm kind of a war on drugs hawk a little bit. Formerly involved in law enforcement and that. And I think we did a good job in trying to stem the flow of drugs in the country and going after the offenders, going after the pushers. But I think that was done back in the 80s at the expense of the demand side, taking care of addiction. It took us a while to realize that, addiction is a disease, and that there are some issues with that. Well, I think with the opioid crisis, we've done a little bit too much on that side, on the soft side, as it were, and kind of ignored the hard side. And the hard side is that most of the deaths from opioids are coming from fentanyl. They're synthetic opioids, not the morphine, not the stuff that, the pharmaceutical companies have created to ease pain and deal with that. It's synthetics. A lot of it's coming from China.
So that was my question, that China, in fact, may be decimating our young people via this fentanyl.
Right. Well, what they do is that, there's dozens, probably hundreds of labs, maybe more, in China that make the component chemicals for fentanyl and some of the other synthetic opioids. And they were using our mail system to get that over here. Now, there was a loophole in the postal system that has pretty much been shut down by, I think it was Senator John Thune, if I'm correct. Ran a bill federally last year to close some of those loopholes. So we're kind of
saying they were just mailing it over?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, but the bigger problem is bring it directly into the United States, but bring it to Mexico or Canada, putting it together there they'll get it to Mexico fairly easily, the component chemicals, where they will then cook it up into this poison, this fentanyl. And there's a number of ways they can do it. They can either, a lot of times what you see is they make counterfeit drugs, counterfeit opioids. So they press into pills and label them and whatnot and make them look legitimate and then push them into the United States illegally. Or they just cut other drugs with it, heroin, marijuana, you name it. Bring that across and, start distributing it. Part of the problem is with all the focus we're putting on the border right now, which I think is good. I think you know my position on that. One thing that Border Patrol doesn't have and that a wall is not going to help with is detection of this stuff coming across the border.
So what can be done?
Unfortunately, it does require a little bit of funding. Now, when we talk about what government should be doing, the role of government, I think most conservatives can agree that public safety and enforcement of law is a proper role of government. So if you're going to be diverting funds anywhere, I would say that would be one thing that you should be doing, is give our guys on the border, Border Patrol, the police, give them the tools they need to to be able to find and detect the stuff. The technology exists. We just don't have a lot of it because we're spending money on, tax credits for electric vehicles or bad art or whatever it is we spend money on. And then giving, of course, our street cops the tools they need, in places like, the middle of Denver to start going after these guys. The police are like anybody else. They have scarce resources, and they can only allocate their resources in so many places. And unfortunately, I think we'll get into a little bit of this when we talk about what's coming up in the session. But we see this war on cops, and it's not just...
I was just thinking about that. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not just, the criminals shooting at them. It's policy.
It is policy.
Towards law enforcement, which we're going to see a lot more of this session. We can get into that in a little bit. But once we stem that, we do need to be giving our law enforcement the tools and the support and the backing that they need and the direction that they need to start going after these guys that are poisoning our kids or going after our... Most vulnerable, and like anything else, the opioid situation has been politicized. So, now you've got some on the left that are taking it to the extreme and saying, "Well, we need to punish the pharmaceutical industry. Mm-hmm. They're the ones that created this. We need to bring them down a peg." Well, tell that to a guy that just got his leg blown off in Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. That morphine is a bad thing. Okay. No, there's a reason. There's a reason for those drugs. It's not the pharmaceutical industry itself that is the enemy here. And quite frankly, the more restrictions you start putting on doctors, what they can prescribe, and what they can't, not only are you going to increase suffering for the patient that needs actual pain medication, and marijuana is not going to do it. So you're creating this new class of victim or this new. That's going to be seeking pain relief elsewhere.
Got it. Because
they can't get it from
chronic pain. It is tough. It's very exhausting. Yeah. Chronic pain. We personally have lost some friends to this, and so this is pretty heartbreaking on it. But once you get government involved, government's not the answer to this. There's something different that is the answer. I mean, education, I think, educating people to understand these effects is pretty important. And then the other thing, and Kelly, we're going to go to break so we can come back here on this other thing, but seems like as Trump is talking about this whole trade war thing with China, that this should be something that should be on the table is stop doing this, China.
Well, so... of course, not the official government of China that's running the labs, but they don't have a lot of incentive, the Chinese government right now, to crack down on these labs that are sending stuff over.
Right. And so that seems like that should be a spot to go.
I agree.
Any other things you want to say? Now, this piece was in the Washington Examiner on December 2nd, right?
Yes.
Okay. So we'll get that up probably in some of our links then.
Appreciate it.
Let's go to break. When we come back, the legislature convened on Wednesday. We were down there with our Stand for Colorado rally, 15 amazing women, to talk about freedom versus force. And you've got your ear to the ground on things that we might be able to expect, and it sounds like you're not too excited about it. So this is Kim Munson. Kelly Sloan is in studio with me. We're going to go to break. We'll be right back.
A reverse mortgage can be an important financial tool for individuals 62 and older. It is essential to understand the process so that all of your questions are answered. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy, Polygon Financial Group, has the experience to answer your questions. Lauren knows that each financial transaction is personal. If you'd like to explore your options on a reverse mortgage or with rates down, explore options to remodel your home, buy a rental property, or move, call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website, kimmunson.com. And also on Monday night, we'll be partnering with Helen Raleigh and Dr. Paul Prentice regarding a town hall salon series at Water's Edge Winery, The Punches to Knock Down Democratic Socialism. You can go to my website, kimmunson.com, for more information on that. Kelly Sloan, thank you, first of all, for being in studio here. You know, a 6 a.m. is a bit early, isn't it?
I can just put off the gym for a couple hours.
Okay, well, it's really great to have you here.
I always appreciate being here.
So what can we expect? You know, it was brutal, really, for freedom, mm-hmm. I think, this last legislative session. And when it's brutal for freedom, it's brutal for everyday hardworking people that don't have time to really be down there 120 days watching what's going on. Right. And I feel taken advantage of because they say, well, you weren't at this hearing, you weren't at this, you weren't at this. Well, you know, we have jobs, we have families, we're trying to take care of them, and we think that you have our best interest in mind. But instead, we've seen an overreach. Is it going to be worse this year?
I think it probably will be. And you know,
how could it be?
Well, for two reasons. First of all, you know, the conventional wisdom is that the second year of a trifecta year like we have with full Democratic control of both chambers and the governor's office, traditionally in the second year, it's an election year, so you think, okay, they get everything down a little bit. Yeah, they get everything they wanted to get done the first year, and then yes, kind of glide the second year a little bit. We're not going to see that this year, and I think for a couple reasons. One, I think they think they have the wind at their back. They think that Colorado, and maybe they're right. I hope not, but that Colorado is becoming a blue state, and this is actually what the voters want because voters have voted in so many Democrats. I hope they're wrong.
But a pushback on that.
Sure.
Because going back to my joke, how can you tell when some of these politicians are lying? It's because their lips are moving. And so what I think that these Boulder, Denver kind of radical activists have done is they're able to, in a way, say what they think people want to hear. For example, Governor Polis had written a letter that I think that I recently, or anyway, a piece that I, it was his op-ed, that's what it was, okay, that was in the Colorado Sun, where he talked about lowering taxes and all these different things that people at the ballot box said last November, we really like to have our taxes lower because right, we kicked down Proposition CC. So they say what people want to hear, and then people go off on their lives, and they elect these people that do the opposite.
Well, that may be the case. I'm just saying what you're asking why I think it's going to be even worse this year than last year.
Okay.
I think that's one. I think, you know, whether it's true or not, you know, whether the voters actually are in that spot or not, I think a lot of the elected Democrats right now think they are.
Got it. Okay.
So
thanks for that clarification.
So that's one reason. The other one is, you know, there's a lot of stuff they didn't get done last year.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, hey. And it was thanks in large part to the minority leadership in both chambers, Minority Leader Patrick Neville in the House and particularly Minority Leader Holbert in the Senate,
okay,
using procedural means to try and slow down as much as they can. There's not much the Republicans can do.
Right.
You know, we're in the minority. So tactically, there's not a whole lot we can do in terms of affecting policy. We can't vote down a lot of these. We can't get our policies passed, or policies we like passed. But there are procedural things that they can do, and especially in the Senate, they used to great effect last year to slow things down enough that it forced some negotiation where otherwise there wouldn't be. And there were a lot of things that just got left on the cutting room floor. The minimum wage, the statewide minimum wage.
Minimum wage.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, again, local control on minimum wage. The plastic, the pyrostyrene ban, that didn't...
Which ban?
Styrofoam.
Oh.
This.
Okay.
For all your listeners who can't see...
We're going to get thrown in the slammer here.
For all your listeners who can't see, I was holding up a styrofoam cup.
That would be a crime, huh?
Well, that's coming. I mean, this year, so now this year, they're going for a statewide... There's going to be some statewide plastics bans, which includes polystyrene. They're going to do away with local preemption. There's going to be a couple. One's going to be doing with local the preemption on plastics, so allowing local governments. Again, this local control thing, which gets a little complicated for conservatives.
It does.
We generally like local control. But the way I kind of couch that is, you know, conservatives believe in political and economic decisions being made at the lowest feasible level. That doesn't necessarily mean at at the local level. You look at oil and gas. There's a reason that in the state, oil and gas development is regulated at the state level because, you know, those reservoirs don't recognize county municipal lines.
Okay, now, you know, I served on city council, and so
yes.
Local government, I think, is really important. But when we talk local, the most local is the individual.
Right.
And so what you're seeing, and this has been, I think, a really, I don't want to say brilliant in a complimentary way, but to be able to use the words local control when they may not be able to get the force figured out here on the national or on the state or the national
right.
level. So they say, we want to push that local control force down to the quote unquote local level. And so you're seeing this with like plastic bag bans and things
right.
like that. It's taking away the choice for people to be able to, you know, go to the market. Maybe they forgot a bag. And quite frankly, unless you wash those reusable bags, you're bringing in germs and bacteria
right.
into the store. But to take away that, you know, that convenience and that opportunity for people to have that choice. And then the other thing is when I was on city council, then at the parks, we were paying somebody to put plastic bags at the parks so people had plastic bags to clean up their dog.
Right.
So, I mean, it's crazy to me. It's crazy.
Well, and it's weird. It's interesting that local control doesn't go both ways. The 181 didn't allow local jurisdiction to have, you know, a more permissive or –
And that's the oil and gas bill, right?
Right, the oil and gas bill. Didn't allow local jurisdictions to, you know, have a more latitudinarian approach to oil and gas development.
Okay.
It only allowed local control to restrict it further. So there's that. But there were a lot of things they didn't quite get done. The family leave bill, which we talked about.
Bad one.
It's a bad one.
Forced family leave. We're all for
sure.
Freedom in
that
issue.
Yeah, but the family leave bill. So last year, because of a lot of efforts, because of the efforts of the Senate Republicans to, you know, use the calendar to great effect, efforts of one of my good friends at Common Sense Policy Roundtable that, put out a study showing how much this is going to cost. It was kind of negotiated that, okay, well, we will bring this down to a study. We won't impose this program last year. Now it's a study. Well, I mean, they did the study. They kind of stacked the
stack. They paid the odds. Somebody to do the study.
Well, it was a task force. It was a,
right.
And, you know, interestingly, you brought up the governor. He actually periodically, and I've written about this before, periodically, as liberal as he is and, you know, as much as I disagree with him, he is an Art Laffer guy. Art Laffer, who's the mm-hmm. father of supply side economics, the father of Reaganomics, Art Laffer is a good friend and advisor to him.
Right.
And you see bits of that shine through every so often. He did recommend to the Family Leave Task Force a lot of things that the business community was saying. To exempt certain smaller businesses, to make it a little more voluntary. Some of this kind of stuff, and they just said, "No, we like."
Mm-hmm.
Like, so they completely rejected his recommendations. But anyway, so that's coming back.
My ear to the ground is saying that initially they were talking about having the employees pay part of the fee
right.
and employers pay the other part of the fee. It might be 2%. Now I'm hearing that they're going to have the employers pay that fee. Now let's just think about it. Instead, they're forcibly taking this money out. The employer, instead of giving you a raise.
Right.
will not have that money available or to hire somebody. And so an employer is not only going to get dinged possibly with forced family leave, a tax fee, but also forced minimum wage. And I think it's going to be really hard on business. We've got a couple of minutes. Kelly, so what's your thoughts on that?
Well, it doesn't surprise me that they're going that way. I think there's a little bit of vindictiveness or revenge mentality now. They say, okay, you buggers, you forced us to not implement this last year, so we're going to. There may be a little bit of that, but there's a couple other dynamics happening here, and I did want to cover. I did mention briefly, public safety. We're going to see a renewed war on cops. It's going to be a tough year for law enforcement. You're going to see use of force. Limitations on the police. I've heard rumors that there's a bill going to be coming to basically you can't even draw a weapon unless you're being shot at. I don't know how far that's going to go.
It seems like that might be a little late.
A little late. And also all the hoops you have to go through if you do use force, all kinds of evaluations and, potentially.
And ultimately what this does, Kelly, is it makes our communities less safe.
Well, of course it does. They're going after, they want to, there's a bill already introduced that essentially wants to shut down private prisons.
Wow.
And it wants to look at ways to get people out of prison, not by
rehabilitating them, but by just kind of shutting things down, huh?
Because they're unjustly or whatever. It's just this mindset.
But yet they want to make it a crime for you and I to drink out of a styrofoam cup.
Well, exactly. Well, they decriminalized most drug felonies last year. Mm-hmm. Brought most drug crimes down to misdemeanor. There's going to be a renewed effort to decriminalize real crime while criminalizing
regular life.
Regular life.
Oh my gosh.
That's why I said, my last line in my column was that the only thing that could be said for certain, and there's a lot of other pieces that, and there's a lot of other things we don't know are going to be happening, but one thing we do know because of the makeup is government's going to be bigger in areas where it shouldn't, and it'll
smaller in areas where it should.
Exactly.
Where can people find your piece quick like?
Colorado Politics every Thursday.
Okay, Colorado Politics. How bad will it be? Kelly Sloan. And great to have you. I think we're going to need to have you back really soon. I know you're going to be really busy, but thanks for being
here.
Happy
to be here anytime.
Really, really appreciate it. And our quote for today is Washington Irving. He said, "There is nothing in this world so hard to get at as truth. And there is nothing in this world but truth that I care for." So today, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America. Young, like a new moon rising, fierce.